It pleases the court. Good morning. My name is James McKinley. I'm an assistant federal defender with the Federal Defender's Office in Indianapolis. And let me preface my argument by saying that the sound system and the acoustics of the courtroom are not real friendly to those of us who count ourselves among the hearing impaired, so forgive me in advance if I need you to repeat any questions you might have. I represent Benjamin Gardner. Mr. Gardner is serving a term of 9 years imprisonment, which was imposed following his...
Sir? Yes. We have read the briefs, but I want to know the difference between the felony that he was charged with, the Class 4 felony, and the statutory common law definition, common law definition of burglary, is that the government does not have to prove the intent of the entry. Am I correct?
That is correct, Your Honor.
The common law rule, breaking and entering a dwelling or other building with intent to commit a theft or another felony would be reduced to breaking and entering any dwelling without any discussion of what your objective or motive might be. Again, am I correct?
Your Honor, the generic term of burglary obviously would cover breaking and entering any structure.
The generic definition of burglary. You have to prove something else, not just the breaking and entering. Breaking and entering may be a crime, but breaking and entering to commit a felony, another felony, a theft or other felony, is burglary.
That is correct.
What we define here is simply burglary without describing the theft or other felony required.
Correct. Correct.
In terms of the danger to the people, makes burglary a forcible felony. What is the difference?
Well, obviously, Your Honor, any time that there is an entry onto real property, whether it be vacant land, whether it be a dwelling, obviously there is, it carries with it that natural risk that the person, that the perpetrator is going to have contact and come into confrontation with the owner.
It's aggravated and almost necessary when you're breaking into a home. Your chances of encountering somebody in the home are much greater than, say, walking into his empty field, breaking into the clothes.
Well, as this court recognized in, I believe it's United States versus Nelson, which this court declined to adopt a per se rule that commercial burglary was a crime of violence.
No, we're not talking about commercial burglary. We're talking about a residential entrance, aren't we?
Well, what we're talking about, Your Honor, is a statute that could be used, that could be employed to prosecute any one of us for walking into the through an unlocked door of our neighbor's house to borrow a screwdriver or a pair of pliers.
Now, wait. You've left the part portion out. There's the mens rea that's still there. You have to be entering illegally and going in. If you start walking into your neighbor's house without knocking or asking permission to come in, even if you went in and you decided you were just going to knock at the door or just walk in and ask him first, you can't walk in and interrupt his breakfast and say, "I'd like to borrow your screwdriver," without getting yourself into some sort of problem. You might be able to beat the rap in terms of intent, but if you're breaking, if you're entering a dwelling house without permission, that's what the statute provides.
Your Honor, the definition of entering under Indiana law includes walking through an unlocked door. It's that simple.
That's true. Burglary, too. You can burglarize the law walking through the unlocked door, but you walk in and just commit a theft or another felony. That's pure, outright burglary. They don't have to lock the door. They don't even have to close it. You can walk through the open door and commit a burglary.
Well, burglary, of course, requires that one enter with the intent to commit a felony once they're in, where residential entry does not.
You don't have to prove why you would enter. We don't know why you would enter. We just know you were there illegally.
That's all that we know, is that he entered, Your Honor. And I can say that the statute can be commonly employed to prosecute an individual or a homeless individual for doing nothing more than going into an unoccupied or abandoned dwelling to seek refuge from the cold. And looking at the charging information against Mr. Gardner, we don't know that he did anything more than that. My point is that this statute is so broad, it covers not only I mean, it covers a lot of ground, and not all of it is crime of violence ground. It's much like the statute this court dealt with in United States versus Shannon, the Wisconsin statutory rape statute, when it recognized that, yes, some of the conduct covered by that would constitute a crime of violence, but not all. There are circumstances where a person could be charged with this and their conduct not constitute a crime of violence. Yes, that is correct, Your Honor. Well, that Judge Barker did, in fact, impose sentences here alternatively. She said, first of all, that the guidelines are, in fact, unconstitutional given her reading of Blakely and this court's decision in Booker. I would note, first of all, that there were no so-called Blakely issues. There were no enhancements that required a judicial determination here. The issue here was simply an issue involving the criminal history. Judge Barker, in exercising her discretion, however, deferred to the guidelines, basically decided she was going to impose sentence within the guideline range, although she was not bound to. She was going to defer to that and exercise her discretion, and her discretion happened to be consistent with what the guidelines called for. I think Judge Barker's pronouncement that the guidelines are unconstitutional may be premature. If the Supreme Court should rule that way, then my argument is out the window. My position, Your Honor, would be that the judge abused her discretion in imposing sentence outside of what I maintain are the applicable or the applicable guideline range, which is 77 months. Well, her my disagreement with the court is that she misapplied the judge misapplied the guidelines. Until the guidelines are in fact overruled, Judge Barker was obliged to impose sentence within the guidelines unless she departed. She did not state or articulate any basis for an upward departure. Therefore, again, my position is the sentence had to be within the 70 to 87 month range. Thank you.
Morning. Yes, Your Honor, I was going to do that. Good morning. My name is James Hanlon. I'm an assistant United States attorney, and I represent the United States in this matter. The threshold issue that it sounds like the court would like to have comments about is the Blakely issue raised by Judge Sykes, and I must first of all comment that I have not come here today thoroughly prepared to engage in a lengthy Blakely analysis. However, I would agree with the analysis the court has set forth as a basis for affirming the district court's ruling, which of course this court can do on any basis in the record. And as the government pointed out at sentencing, the factors which Judge Barker articulated in fashioning the sentence in this case are the same factors that a court traditionally would have taken into account before the guidelines were even ever enacted, and factors involving the nature of the offense, the criminal history involved with the person. And so in the government's view, I would certainly agree that Judge Barker's sentence is entirely appropriate, assuming that the guidelines are completely out of play and that there is no basis for the court to find that there would be an abuse of discretion in the sentence that she fashioned here. Correct. That is absolutely correct, and I apologize if I was unclear, but that's exactly.
Yeah, the premise that she was correct, legally correct, when she said the guidelines were not constitutional, were not applicable. Before we get to her unfettered discretion.
Could Your Honor please repeat that question? I'm sorry.
In order to uphold her unfettered discretion, we would have to find that she was also correct in saying the guidelines were not applicable.
I believe that is correct, Your Honor. So I would agree with the point made by Judge Sykes that the sentence imposed by Judge Barker was well within her discretion in fashioning a sentence taking into account the factors that courts traditionally were allowed to take into account before the guidelines were even came into play. Moving on to one other issue here, the judge did, as Mr. McKinley said, the judge did fashion or specifically state on the record that her sentence would have been the same had the guidelines applied, had the guidelines been applicable in this case. And I think that the court here did correctly use the analysis at looking at this felony offense of residential entry, relying on United States v. Taylor and its progeny. Judge Barker looked at the risks associated with the conduct and based her analysis on the charged offense rather than the real offense, which of course is the exact analysis that she was supposed to have engaged in here. And the issue which she ultimately decided was that, as Judge Bauer had asked about before, was bottom line is that knowingly breaking and entering into the dwelling of another person is conduct that categorically presents a serious risk of physical harm to another person. I was in the courtroom earlier this morning when the court engaged in a pretty lengthy analysis of the Housie case with my colleague from Wisconsin, and I believe that without going back through the whole case, because it's discussed in the brief, and the court obviously is very familiar with that case, that does set forth the appropriate categorical analysis, and that's exactly what Judge Barker did. She discussed the categorical analysis. She cited the Housie case and the cases that are cited within there. Finally, in response to what Mr. McKinley said about the breadth of the statute, the government does not agree that this is like the statute involved in Shannon or in Nelson, where the court essentially discussed statutes that could encompass both violent conduct and non-violent conduct, rather the statute involved here always carries with it a serious potential risk of physical injury to another. And I think that Judge Bauer really has just hit the nail on the head by pointing out you have a mens rea element required in the statute, knowing conduct, plus somebody's dwelling. I think that the entire analysis set forth in the Taylor case talks in great detail about the inherent risks associated with somebody knowingly being in somebody else's dwelling. And that's a very dangerous situation, ripe for violent encounters, and that's exactly why this statute categorically should be classified as a crime of violence, as this court has done with respect to fleeing from law enforcement, escaping from custody, theft from a person, and numerous other statutes. If the court has no further questions, the government would rely on the arguments and authorities set forth in this brief and respectfully request that the court affirm the judgment of the district court below. Thank you.
Your Honor, United States versus Howes does not control the case. The holding in Howes that street thefts, thefts from a person, constitute a crime of violence categorically is because the contact with the victim is unavoidable. It is invariably there will be contact between the two and the potential for eruption of violence.
Contact with the individual is avoidable. If it was residential burglary in nobody's home, contact is impossible.
Contact is possible, but it's not inevitable. If nobody's home, there's not going to be any contact. Burglary of a dwelling by definition, Your Honor. Right, and the Sentencing Commission therefore decided they're going to list burglary of a dwelling as a categorical crime of violence. No, this is not, Your Honor. Residential entry does not fall within that definition of burglary of a dwelling. Residential is a separate and distinct offense because it's a lesser included offense because it doesn't involve the circumstance or the specific intent requirement of intent to commit a felony. And contact with the owner of the victim is not.
It says intentionally enter and it's described as a felony. So you do. What you don't have to do is prove that there was another felony in mind when you went in.
That's correct, Your Honor. That's correct. I see my time is finished. Thank you very much. Okay.